we are back. Welcome to Inside Running, the first show for 2018, joined with Brad Croker, who's back after spending some time down the coast, and Julian Spence after being up at Falls Creek with all the elite athletes like himself. How are we, boys?
Good, Brady. Happy New Year.
Yeah, same to you. Same to you. All good,
Happy
Julian?
New Year. All good here, mate.
All good here. New year, new you or what?
Yeah, I reckon. I'm recharged. I feel good.
Yeah, well, just
keep how many autographs did you sign in Falls Creek?
I tried to duck all the coverage and the attention, so I just go out and do my own thing, get away from the girls. Bree gets jealous.
Shirts off.
I didn't even take a shirt. I should have, because it wasn't that warm.
Tell us about it. Was it good out there? What was happening?
Yeah, it's good. I think it's something that a runner should do at least once in their career. I mean, I was only there for a week, and I got there pretty early, like Boxing Day. When we drove up the mountain Boxing Day, it was dead. We were like the only car in the village. All the cafes were shut, and there was no one running whatsoever. It was pretty much just us. And then over the next couple of days, we saw a lot more cars roll through, and you'd see groups out running or in the icing pool, more cars out at the running spots. And I didn't do like every group run, because if you really wanted to up there, you could show up to every group run every day, twice a day, and really get to know people. But I didn't do that. I just went out when I felt like it to different spots and to different like trails. So it was fun. Like, it's a great place to run. It's really unique, Falls, in that it's flat, or there's flat bits and you're on a mountain. Like, that's the biggest difference between pretty much any other mountain in Australia, is that to get that high, normally you have to go to a sharp angle. Like, you can't go to Mount Hotham and try to run, or Buller. It's all just steep stuff. So Falls is unique in that you can go to spots and run maybe a 10-mile run on flat ground, or even just little undulations, rather than running into like crazy mountain trails or anything like that.
Talk us through your week. So what kind of train do you hit? It's pretty standard, like three sessions in a long run.
Well, I got up there on the think I got up there on the Monday. Tuesday afternoon.
Monday, so I just went Christmas, out for
Tuesday afternoon, got out there, went for an easy run. Didn't see anyone. Just noticed I was short of breath immediately. So that was one of the first things that I did notice, is going up to maybe 5,000 feet or so. I need to look into that. So 5,000 feet, which is right about the start, the sort of point where you start getting altitude benefit, I think. But what it does do, like, it really makes you gasp for breath, especially early in your runs when you're not used to it. And anytime you hit a hill or any bit of intensity. So the first run I did was just an easy run, straight uphill out of the village. It was just puffing away. And I had my heart rate on and thought, oh, this could be a long week. And then on the next day, Wednesday, I went out and did about 19K, ran over to a place called Pretty Valley, which is basically up and over the mountain. So it's a pretty hilly one. That was a nice run. Bree was out there with a cyclocross bike, just keeping me company and doing some good work on the hills. Just an easy run. That night I joined the group for the second run. So I think I joined the group that night, and there was like, basically you walk up to the top of the village to an aqueduct trail, and everyone leaves at 5:30, and I reckon there would have been 80 runners that night, and I think I was running maybe 4:30s, 4:40s, and probably in about 75th position, right at the very back of the pack. I was the oldest there, I reckon I would have been the oldest, or at least like the second or third oldest out of the whole pack. And all the kids, they go like 20 minutes, so they turn around after 10 minutes. And you end up getting a trail to yourself, or you run with someone to chat to for the 8K loop that I did, or out and back.
Yeah, you touch that rock, don't you?
I didn't touch the rock.
You don't touch it, but you just go to the rock.
You go to the rock, yeah.
It's a good 8K, actually. It goes fairly quick, isn't it?
It does go quick, and you've got someone to talk to. Like, pretty rare that you end up by yourself out there, which is a good thing about falls. Like, it's very social, if you want that. So it works out quite well on the second easy run when you normally sort of battle to get out by yourself. And then on the Thursday, went out with some of the Melbourne Uni boys, Nick Earl, Charlie Park, and Max Ueda. And we did 10 by 2 minutes on, 1 minute off on the Aqueduct Trail at Langfords. So that was the first bit of intensity I've really ever done at altitude. And I cooked myself early. I went too hard. I had Nick there, who's fitter than I am at the moment, clearly. And I sort of maybe just tried to hang on to him for a bit and then fell back to where Charlie was. And Charlie and I worked together, I guess, for most of the workout. And I didn't really care about pace whatsoever, because who knows what it's supposed to be like at altitude. I got told you're supposed to drop your pace by about 5 to 10 seconds a K, maybe for K reps or something. So I didn't really know how that would translate to fartlek. So it was a good learning experience. I just didn't look at my pace at all. It just wasn't relevant. Finished that, it was pretty tough. And then another easy run with the group that evening. And then Friday, I believe there is another run that goes on. But we went and Bree and I went and ran up to Spion Kopka, which is like a traditional run up there. It heads towards Mount Bogong. So I ran on some of the Bogong to Hotham course, which brought back some memories from nearly 12 months today, actually. Tough one to take Bree on, because the hill is rough, like really rough, and it's super long and pretty steep. So she had a shit time. That was a bit rough by me taking her up there. And it ended up being about 16K, but it took us forever because it's not bike territory out there. Then on Saturday, the traditional Fitzy's Hut run, which is a pretty much a 10 miler, isn't it? Round about that?
Yeah, 16K, yeah.
Yeah, about 16K, where you run out on Langfords Gap Aqueduct for about 7K, 6 or 7K. I reckon it's about 6 to 7, 6 and a half maybe. And you, maybe 7K. Yeah, you're supposed to not go too hard or something. There's some rules about it. You have to be there, like you're not allowed to be at the turn-off point at a certain time. And then after you get to the point where the session starts, it just goes up a really steep hills pretty quickly, and everyone just goes hell for leather up there, and then you run across the trail, Fitzy's Trail, or I think it's called, Fitzgerald's Trail, and you run past Fitzy's Hut and then back down onto the road and home. It's a pretty tough workout, actually. It's a lot of hills in it, and it's really shitty footing underneath. So you have to concentrate on where your foot goes. It's a hellish headwind up the top of the plains, really strong, and the hills early in that workout just knock you for six. So I battled on that one. Finished off pretty strongly, which I was happy with, but geez, it was tough. And then Sunday group long run, you meet down in the village, and most people meet there. Actually, no, some people meet there, and a few people will run the 20, I think it's 23K, the loop that takes you out to Langfords Gap, and they'll get a lift back into the village. And a few of us went 30K. I think there's about six of us who went 30K. But the first sort of 5K is straight up the mountain. And then at the top of the mountain, all these kids get driven up there and dropped off because they don't want to run as far, but they're totally fresh at the top. You've just battled your way up 5K. And so they jump into the group. You sort of push the, everyone starts running faster for some reason there because they don't want to run with the kids. And then it's almost like it turns, well, it felt like it turned into a tempo run the whole way home. So from 20, for me, it felt like a bit of a 20 to 25K tempo run, really. That were the main sessions of falls.
Yeah, it's almost like the Moose is making mistakes that he bangs on about. Not making on this podcast, though, like hammering your long runs. I'm just looking at your splits on Strava, 346s, 350, racing kids when you know you shouldn't be, 170 heart rate.
173 heart rate.
Yeah, don't look at the heart rate. That was where I really fucked up.
157 average, yeah.
It's like I'm a running tempo. Along the yeah, it was a tempo, exactly. Mm. I'm running along the road at 26K, looking at my watch, and I'm seeing 165 heart rate, and I'm going, what are you doing? Like, this is the dumbest thing you've ever done. Just, like, there's a group there, and just because you can hang on to it doesn't mean that you should be hanging on to it. So there's, you don't want to be the guy who gets dropped, really. Like, that's the only reason that I was still running that pace is because I didn't want to be the guy that got dropped.
You wouldn't usually let the ego get in the way there. Like, you know what wisdom means, don't you? Like, you have the knowledge and you enforce it in your life, not just have the knowledge and ignore it.
Yeah, I did end up pulling back from it, though. Like, at that point, I did. It was a bit late, sure. Mm. But those boys pushed on into the village, and I saw Nick Earle afterwards, and he was totally fucked. So that's a man who doesn't know how to hold back. Yeah, when I dropped out of that group, I was pretty happy. I still ticked in at like 4 minute Ks. Couldn't get my heart rate down at that point. But if I had have stayed on with that group, I probably wouldn't have even been able to do a session today.
Yeah, right. What'd you learn up there? Anything? You see some people making other mistakes or things you admired, or what's the feedback from it? Do it again?
No, I won't do it again. No. I just didn't like... I like to do my own things, and I don't like someone else telling me when I should run or where I should run, which I can go up there and do that, but then you just run into bunches of people. And to be honest, they're not the most friendly cats in the world. Like, the amount of times I ran past people on those aqueduct trails and sort of smiled or said g'day and got absolutely nothing back, it countless times. And I thought, oh, you little fuckers. Like, I'm up here. A lot of them are...
I'm a 280 marathoner.
They didn't know that you. They didn't know who you were. They didn't know you're the big Moose.
Yeah, did anyone?
A few of them nearly ended up in the water. That's for sure.
Did anyone say anything to about the podcast?
What's that?
Do you have any listeners from the podcast up there? Anyone recognise your voice?
Oh, Rammer Jared Clifford on the long run.
Oh, you can see why I rate that kid highly, then, can't you?
Yeah, that was impressive. Actually,
he's 18, going on 30. That kid's maturity.
Yeah, he was pushing too. Man, and then on this
vision impaired, he would have struggled big time on that long run.
Yeah, on the aqueduct, he's like has to stare at the ground in front of him to make sure every foot placement goes in the right spot. Yeah. And then, you know, the aqueduct has all these little ramps.
Yeah,
he kind of needs someone to tell him down ramp, and then he'll look ahead, and he's like basically almost feels his way through it. So he's kind of curved over with his head almost like getting as close to the ground as he can. It was really impressive to watch, that's for sure.
Yeah, good kid. I'm just looking at his Strava now as well. Like, he was pretty much with you the whole time in that long run.
Yeah, he was in front. I was bloody... He bailed out a bit early. I think he did an hour 45 maybe.
Yeah, 24K, 402s.
Yeah, so I slowed down after I left him. That's yeah. He was good, like, to run on that sort of trail... With a vision impairment, I rolled my ankle 15 times.
Yeah, I think you talk about that in this week's interview with Pat Tin as well, so we'll leave that ankle turn to then. Bradley, tell us what you've been up to. Yeah, you want to have a crack?
Yeah, just one quick question. I noticed on Boxing Day you did a session, so a couple of days after a hard 10K. You would normally do?
That wasn't a session, really. Like, I mean, it was faster running, but it was with Blake. He had a workout on, and I just jumped in because I was feeling pretty good about it. Like my legs weren't sore or I wasn't tired.
Okay.
So I think I did 2 by 10 minutes at 3:20s or something, was it?
Yeah, something like that.
It wasn't that fast, and it felt comfortable. So,
just curious, because I'd probably have close to a week off, I reckon, after a 10K track race in terms of sessions, just because I'd imagine I'd be pretty banged up from it.
Can I jump in instead of your week, Brad? Because I want to go on my week, because I was totally wiped out because I was so cooked from that Steigen 10K. But Julian, did you say you pulled up pretty good? And do you reckon that's down to the shoes as well? Like, I was spiked up and I battled big time.
The shoes look after you on the track.
Yeah.
There's more cushion, there's a higher heel drop. You've got a little bit more upper around your foot, like, to hold you in. It's good.
I was in big trouble all week. I'll go my week, Brad, then we'll go to you, eh? Because you had an impressive week. So there was nothing much special in my week. I ended up hitting 180K, but the majority of that was just slow jogging at 4:45 pace. So easy couple of runs on Christmas Day, easy 20K on Tuesday, Boxing Day. Did a session on the Wednesday, which initially was 4 by 3K with 1K float, but slower pace. But I just pulled at 3. My calves were really tired and, there was just kind of no purpose. Really hot day and just got that done. So I ended up averaging 3:16, kind of hitting the 3Ks in about 9:25-ish. So nothing special there, but, okay on tired legs. Some more slow jogging, easy 80 minutes. Then I had to go up park run on the Saturday. Ran a course record, but still struggled. 15:14 it was officially. Considering I ran the last 5K, that 10K, 7 days before in 15:03 or something, it just shows how I struggle on that parkrun course. I'm probably still a bit tired from that race. And then a really easy 35K on the Sunday morning at 4:32 pace. So I was out there for about 2 hours and 38 minutes, I think it was in the end, but really enjoyed that. I said on the show a couple of weeks ago that I'm looking to just do my long runs a bit slower and concentrate on time on feet. So I think probably other than pacing a marathon a couple of years ago at about 3:10, that's probably the longest I've been on my feet. So, and it was just really pleasant, just not killing yourself on a Sunday long run. And then New Year's Eve, I actually had to go at a beer mile. I know we spoke about it a couple of weeks ago, but one of my mates has started up the Echukamoama Beer Mile Association, and they want to run one New Year's Eve every year. So Benny did a good job and organised a bit of a media release, and there was a bit of banter going around the emails and stuff. And had a crack at that on the New Year's Eve at about 5:30, and struggled. Ran 8:58. You guys haven't done one before, have you?
No,
I haven't done one, but I know that's slow.
8:58. No, remember we were running with Dano after the 10K, and he said he's ran 10 minutes, and you said that was impressive.
No, I don't think I was. Maybe I was making him feel good, but
maybe I'm going to talk to Dano about this. No, well, I had to do the penalty lap. I was in second place, and the guy who was winning, he was mowing down the beers way quicker than I was. But then I was catching him on the laps, and going into the fourth lap and the fourth beer, I kind of thought I've really got to make up some time on this drinking, and then he'll be a sitting duck out in the track. But the fourth beer didn't stay down and come back up, and then had to bang out the penalty lap. So I went from sitting in second, looking like I could have won it, to finishing fourth out of five finishes. So the inaugural Chukamoan Beer Mile has commenced, and I thought if I could run 8 minutes, I'd be going all right. Had a bit of a practice, actually. One of those afternoons on my afternoon run, I came home and just scaled a beer and ran up to the local kinder and back in my street. And I knew at that stage it was going to be hard. Wouldn't recommend it to anyone. Very, very hard. Thanks to Josh Harris, the Australian Beer Mile record holder, for helping me out, for some advice leading into it. But good week for me. Sore week. Got over that 10K, 180K in the legs. 9 weeks to Lake Biwa.
Were the tips? Sorry, what were the tips?
He kind of said to kind of spread it. So you don't want to be like smashing the running, but you also don't want to be smashing the beer. So you kind of got to be okay at both rather than being extraordinary at one or the other. And the rules, that's probably what I was talking to him more about. Like, you know, we were measuring, had to measure beers at the end to see how much was left over, and there's certain rules about what the percentage and how many mils the beers need to be, and yeah, it was quite, there's quite a bit of work to it, but thanks to me mate Benny, who was organising it, the president, and yeah, he did a good job putting it together, and it was quite fun, and yeah, maybe something that could grow in years going forward on New Year's Eve if you're over in Chukamauama. But yeah, I was happy with 858. I think, yeah, that was something I could work on. Brad, over to you.
PB anyway. It was a PB.
PB, yeah. What could have been, eh? I was looking at my watch when I started that penalty lap, and it was like 7:40, and I'm like, 7:40 would be respectful. But anyway, over to you.
All right, so I was down the coast, so I came off Christmas Eve, close to 42K, so I had a pretty light start to the week, so slept in Christmas Day and went out in the afternoon, and I just get sick of running on the road and the bike paths down there. So I had a look on Strava for a new trail and thought I found one, got onto Google Maps and went to Street View, and it all looked pretty good through the bush. And then I got there and I regretted it straight away. It was just a goat track, and coming off a marathon the day before in terms of volume, it wasn't what I wanted. And there's a couple of hills in there where I just looked up at them and like you wouldn't have been able to drive a car up. So that was I certainly won't be running there ever again. So I ended up doing 40 minutes. So that was Christmas Day, just the one run. Tuesday, another pretty easy day, just 65 minutes in the morning, just along the river down there, sort of 4:18s, and then just a 35 minutes on the flat in the afternoon. First session for the week was Wednesday morning, which, it's dead flat around there, and you can sort of get rolling pretty quick. So session was 6x1K off 90 seconds slow jog, and I was pretty happy with that. I ended up running like 3 minutes for the first one, and then 2:57, 2:57, 2:57, 2:54, 2:51, and just, you know, sort of 4:30 pace for the 90 seconds, which I felt like I was recovering well during that, so that was encouraging. I don't think I've run a 251 kilometer for a long time, and it's just so quick down there. I'd love to have a 5k race down there, because like the bends aren't super extreme and the surface is good and it's just dead flat. So I did those in the Zoom Flies.
You seen the map of this, Julian? Just sorry to interrupt you, Brad, but this loop looks very similar to the Industrial Estate loop, and there could be questions about if this is also short, because it looks, those bends are the nice ones to take, but geez, it starts with your Garmin. Don't believe it, Brad. I'm questioning the Industrial Estate.
Well, and I don't, but I've done sessions here before where I've done, I think, 10 by 2 minutes off a minute float and average like 3:03. So I don't get too... I don't get too caught up on the splits, but if I'm running 2:51, I'm pretty sure I'm at least running 3 minutes. Like, it's not going to be 9 seconds a K out. So felt good. Then, 35 minutes in the afternoon. Thursday morning, so we came back to Canberra actually on the Wednesday, so did that in the afternoon here. Thursday morning, just 90 minutes at 4:17s. Then my second session for the week was 3x10 minutes off a 2 minute jog, which I did out at Stromlo. So I did that around the 2.5K loop and then just made up the extra bit on the 1K and then jogged the remainder of that 1K loop for the recovery. I think Stromlo is a bit like the Industrial Estate as well, in that the Garmin times are quite generous with the twists and the turns. So Garmin times, I was running 3:08s for the first rep, 3:07s for the second, and 3:04s. But I just wanted to make sure that each lap that I was doing was slightly quicker than the last, and jogging the 2 minutes in sort of 4:15, 4:20 kilometre pace. So that was good. Felt pretty strong at the end of it. Saturday was 14K in the morning, just with my coach. He was still in Canberra, so that was the last run that I had with him. That was 4:32s for me, so it's probably the slowest run I've had in 2017, I reckon. And then 35 minutes in the afternoon, felt really good. And then Sunday was sort of once a month I've been doing the long run with the tempo at the end. So I went out in the bush and did 28K at 4:04s, which had about 300 metres of climbing in it. So I wanted to try and bang the legs up a little bit. Heart rate was pretty good. It was 135, which for that sort of pace, I guess, is okay. And then just went straight into a 5K at, ended up running 16:15, which was good. And then a 10-minute cool down. So that was like 35K morning and about 160K for the week. So, yeah, it was all good. Like, yeah, nothing super extraordinary, but body's in one piece. And all the longer stuff and the strength stuff feels really good at the moment. So, yeah.
Yeah, he's in a good spot, isn't he, Moose?
Oh, yeah, he's looking fit. You can tell there's, like, a little bit of understatement in his voice, but he knows he's moving.
Oh, yeah. Wouldn't want to be going against this guy in a couple of weeks in a marathon. Take you the hot tip.
Yeah, still a long way to go, though. And the focus over the last month has definitely just been on strength. So, like, I've run a lot more hills this time around than I have ever. So hopefully that'll help me come the marathon, which it seemed to work pretty well for Julian. I just think, I don't know, I really think hills are underrated for a marathon runner. Yeah. And not so much doing hill reps, but just running over hilly terrain.
Mm. Yeah.
Because I've noticed a massive improvement. You know, that session, you don't have to run hill reps, but those kilometre long hills that I've been doing with a couple of steep pinches, you get to like a moderate hill after that and it feels like a flat. So so imagine then if you're on the flat of like Lake Biwa, hopefully that'll feel even easier.
I've got this email here though, Brad, that I wanted to bring up with you. It's from Shane from Richmond. Dear Brady, not sure if you'd be keen to bring this up on this week's Insider Running podcast, but just a quick one about Brad's training. I've noticed his easy running is still really fast to what you and Julian hit. Do you think this is going to bring him undone leading into the Lake Biwa Marathon? And what do you think his good mate Sean Crichton would be thinking? Shane from Richmond.
It's a good point. I think a couple of weeks ago I was doing really well. Over the last week, there's probably been a couple of runs that have been a little bit too quick. I guess the thing, in a couple of weeks' time, I'm actually having a week off. So I'll run this week solid, and then next week I'm just running 120K, just jogs. So hopefully that'll freshen me up a bit. But I'm definitely running slower than I was before, but there's certainly room for improvement. I don't know. Maybe it will bring me unstuck, but hopefully not.
Nah, we're touching wood for you. You'll be right this time around.
Yeah.
Comes to the next thing, boys, a bit of a quick conversation about our training for 2017. Kind of, I looked up our stats and it was amazing how similar they were. Julian and Brad, you guys pretty much ran 6,700 Ks each and I was 7,100. And Julian and I, there was only about 30 minutes between the duration we both ran for the year, with 5 hours and 2 minutes. And I was 5 hours and 3 minutes, which is pretty amazing when I look that up, that we both spent pretty much the same time out there running. But things we learned, Julian, a massive breakthrough year for you, 2016.
I guess I had the marathon where I broke through what I thought I could ever achieve. So for me, that's the year. This is the year of last year was my year that I'll always look back on with fond memories. And it's consistency again. Like, you can see that many kilometers. That's why I ran a good marathon. In my mind, that's why you ran a good marathon. And that's why Brad will run a good marathon. He's consistent, high kilometers. That's why it's happening.
Do you think it is, though, like, when you divide that by the amount of weeks in the year, though, like, we're still coming out at, like, 138 Ks a week. Like, you read all these guys, and Sean said on the podcast a couple of weeks ago that week in, week out, 200 K weeks, like, everyone was doing it, and that's why everyone was running 212s and 213s back in the 80s and 90s. Like, are we a bit soft when we look at these overall statistics?
What you'll find here, and this is nothing against Sean or... like, I'm not saying that the guys didn't do that, but there's a little bit of mayo on those sort of things. Like, after a marathon, the guys aren't running 200K. The week after a marathon, they're still not running 200K. I've been reading this book about marathon, like this runner's tribe, top 10 Australian performances in the marathon, and it details their training. Then after a marathon, they're not coming back for 4 to 6 weeks until they're doing sessions. And that's like when they're in full training, yeah, great, like 200K, spot on. But say they do two marathons a year, that's 8 weeks that they're recovering from those marathons, plus the tapers leading into them. Like it's
100% agree.
And the tapers leading into like the half marathons as lead ups and 10K track races and whatever, because that's what gets you. It's okay to do 180, 200K a week for the 10 weeks leading into a major marathon, or the 10 weeks and then you ease it back for the 2 weeks into it. But yeah, looking at that, it's like it's really hard to do big mileage and average those big weeks if you're having those down weeks.
And one thing Sean will tell you, which there's a quote that he didn't actually say in his interview, but he has a rule of thumb that he would have a pretty much day recovery for every mile raced. So after a marathon, 26 miles, he wouldn't do anything really hard for at least close to a month. So, as Julian said, there's no way they're running 200 kilometres the week after a marathon. So, and if you're running 200Ks for most of the year and then you have your 8 weeks where you're not, where you're running 100K, it brings the average down pretty quick.
Now that makes me feel a bit better, because I think when you're working full-time as well, like it's hard to fit 140, 20K a day, every day of the year average is pretty significant when you're juggling work and commitments and other things when running isn't paying the bills.
I'm pretty happy if that's what mine came out as, much.
I was happy with that and happy with my kind of, like I think my year was solid, like wasn't a massive breakthrough, but took a bit of time off the half, nearly ran a 10 PB, nearly ran a 3 PB, kind of learned, I think more importantly, through this podcast, like actually learned a lot of stuff talking to you boys and the people we've interviewed and feel like I'm going into 2018 as a more knowledgeable runner and not making mistakes going forward. Summary on your year?
It was good. I missed 6 weeks. So I ran, 6,735K, which is the biggest year I've ever had. And then I guess, I missed 6 weeks of training. And I still don't think I really did. Okay, maybe I peaked too early, but the injury that I got was a result of me cutting the back out of my shoe. And that was a result of having some tibant tendonitis from rubbing on the shoe initially. So I don't think I did a lot wrong, and I haven't missed a beat since I got that cortisone. I haven't missed a day other than the flight home. So I'm pretty happy with that. The thing I learned out of it was obviously the consistency that Julian's touched on, but for me, regular Wednesday long runs or midweek long run and I guess consistently sort of over 30K on a Sunday has just meant that my body has become, I guess, longer tempos I'm more comfortable with. Like they used to scare the shit out of me like this time last year because all I ever used to do when I was a track runner was 20 to 30 minutes at sort of 3:15s, and the thought of going out and doing that for like an hour in training, I was scared of. But now I feel like my body's a lot stronger and can handle that, which I guess is needed for the marathon.
Yeah, good. And you're in a great spot moving forward, like starting 2018. Strong base behind you, ready to go. Running news, it's really light on last week because obviously it's Christmas and New Year's and not much happened. But our man, it seems like you bang on about this bloke every week on the podcast, Yuki Kawauchi, went over to the United States. Got as cold as -23. Not sure if you saw the pictures of him, kind of in the almost the balaclava and the long tights and the long arm warmers, and he broke the record for the most sub 220 marathons by running his 76th career marathon in this really low key marathon. Took 30 minutes off the course record, and finished in 2:18:59, and just blows me away. This guy's his ability to recover and push himself to the very limit.
He's a superman, basically. Can't compare him to normal folk, that's for sure.
I love how he just does this low key. Like he was over running the course at Boston, like just to get ready for that kind of thing. But just jumps in this low key marathon. The race literally you couldn't sign up till on the day. Like that's how low key this race was, and they got it sanctioned just so he could run. Have it accredited so he could claim the record. So, and like even there's a video. Have you guys seen the video of him coming around the home bend on the straight? See, check it on Twitter or Instagram, whatever. But literally, it's like iced over, and he nearly slips over with like 50 metres to go when he's running 2:18.59. An amazing human. The other bit of news was that the London Marathon winner from last year, I'm really excited about this race going forward, is set to take on Daniel Wanjiru, is set to take on Mo Farah and Callum Hawkins over the half marathon distance in March. In the what's it called? The big half, which is in London, runs on a similar course to the London Marathon. And I don't know, I haven't been excited about a high profile half marathon in a while, and I reckon this could be a really good match race.
Yeah, when's that? March. So
yeah, it's gonna be perfect.
Would Mo Farah run the half world half championships? Or is he just not get paid for that and wouldn't bother?
Yeah.
Well, it depends. When is World Half?
March.
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't say anything in this article about it, but it's kind of because I think Hawkins is... No, he's going for the marathon at the Gold Coast Com Games, I'm pretty sure. Couldn't tell you, but it would be good to have him in the event, but I think probably a big high-profile race that's on his local streets would probably do more for his credibility and stuff leading into the London Marathon, which is a bit bad to say, than a world championship half marathon in Valencia would.
Plus, if it's on the course that he's going to be running the marathon on, that's pretty good preparation.
I'd say cash money's probably got a lot to do with it as well, I reckon.
That's what I was thinking.
I'm thinking cash money.
He lives the Hollywood lifestyle.
Yeah, he looks
good. As if he needs more money, though. Like, surely it gets to a point where you don't run for money anymore.
Do you know how much insurance is on a Ferrari, Brad?
No, I don't.
It's a lot.
Yeah. Well, I think, if anything, the easier she is to cash in. Like, he's got all those medals and he can kind of use them to ask for the appearance fees. And, you know, the money's in the roads and that's where he's headed.
Mm.
He's in money-making territory now in his career. Couple of listener questions real quick before we get to Moose on the Loose, and then we close this show down. Sean Teasdale, this is a really good question, and I think he wrote this one to me on Strava, so thanks, Sean, for flicking this one through. Can you boys tell me what marathon in Australia you think are the best? Fastest courses are the key. Ooh, interesting. It's an interesting one.
Gold Coast and Melbourne.
What if you run 4 hours, Brad? Gold Coast isn't fast in the heat, is it, if you come from the north or the south?
Yeah, all right, well, I'll go Melbourne then.
Melbourne.
If you're running, Melbourne, if you're running 4 hours. It can be.
It's unpredictable,
it can be if
though.
Conditions are good.
Yeah, but it's always good at Gold Coast. Like, at least it's always still at the Gold Coast.
Yeah. Well, I think if you live in Queensland, then Gold Coast is ideal because the heat's probably not going to be a factor. But if you're coming from the southern states... Gold Coast, yeah, can be pretty tough, especially if you're out there for a while.
Yeah, I don't think there's one answer because we really don't know what Sean's aiming for and where he's from. But the Gold Coast as an event is amazing. Like, if you want to run a big city marathon later on overseas, do the Gold Coast first because that will get you kind of ready. And that's just organisation is top notch. And just a good event to be a part of. Melbourne's good as well. What about Great Ocean Road, Julian? Your favourite?
Yeah, well, I mean, if you left off the last sentence and said what marathons in Australia are the best, then that's a better question for me because Great Ocean Road is the best. It attracts the best field, pays the most prize money, it's the most prestigious, the most scenic. So, yeah, I would say Great Ocean Road. But then it's not fast. It's a race for the tough guy, that's for sure.
Yeah,
and it's gotta be tough.
And this is to buddy up another question. I don't have his name, sorry, here, but he also asked this other gentleman, and sorry for not having your name, but he also asked Julian about the O'Keefe Rail Trail Marathon. I think he was signed up for that.
Yeah,
that question popped up somewhere, and this is probably a perfect time to answer that question as well. Just your recommendations as the winner of that race last year.
What was the question, though?
Just asking your opinion on the race as he was keen to run it.
Oh, yeah. So it's a lot harder than you think it is, put it that way. I kind of rolled up to that race thinking it's pretty flat, nice little gravel surface. We'll go out and do a 40K tempo. And it just turned into a 20K tempo and a 20K death march. it's like net uphill and it's false flats the entire way. So you think you're on the flat, but you're wondering why it feels so damn hard, but it's not, it's going uphill. And yeah, mate, that was tough. I didn't like it. I don't like, if I did it as a once off, I would probably enjoy it more. But when you've got half your eye on a race a month later and only half your other eyes on this event and trying to hurt yourself in the least possible manner just to get to the end or to win it, it's not a good situation. So I won't do it again, I don't think, unless they have that flight back to England.
Yeah, I saw you at the end that day, and you were 100 times more cooked in that at the end than you were at Berlin.
Yeah, I was smashed. I was walking in that race. There were bits where I was walking, no shit, and it was tough. I remember seeing Bree early, maybe 23, she has some drinks for me, and I was just shook my head and said, today is not a good day. This is a long way home.
It is well organized and pretty scenic though, like, so if you just want to go out for a nice scenic marathon and you're not too focused on times and you pace yourself well, it's a fantastic trail. I did a bit of running on it when I was back in Bendigo, and I think, what was the race? I did the 28K that day, and that's a good entrance point. Probably if you're starting to think about the marathon, do the 28K 1 year and then go back and do the marathon the year after, because it's that will give you a great taste of what's to come.
Yeah, yep. Don't go there looking to run fast.
Yeah, go up. We'll leave the other listener questions to next week. Brad's got to get out of here in a minute. So Moose on the Loose. There's been some great comments coming in about Moose on the Loose, people's favourite segment. Really really struck a chord last week with the Christmas theme and people getting pissed off leading into Christmas and their family's comments on Christmas Day about running.
Oh, well, good. Because I didn't have anything before then. I thought that was a bit weak, but I'm happy with that.
Yeah. Keep it going.
All right, so I've been flat out again, back to work, and I don't get a lot of chance to think up topics, and I'm pretty chilled out. Nothing really pisses me off much, except for one thing per
week.
You've
got a whole segment, yeah.
Lies, lies.
So tonight, I remember reading during the week, there was this article in the Geelong Advertiser about a cyclist who was riding along the Barwon River, and a dog off leash got under his wheel and he fell off, and it was like a big debate on dogs, and it got me thinking, dogs and runners do not get along, generally speaking. And I know there's a lot of people out there that love running with their dog and that's their thing. They bought a running dog, they go out, they think it's great, they look around and go, hey, my dog's over there, isn't that cool, that's fun, it's coming with us. And everyone else in the group is like, oh, yeah, it's really cool. In their head, they're going, why did he bring that fucking dog again? Like, can't we just go for a run without the dog? It's always running off causing shit with other dogs. It's getting under your feet. If there's a leash, then he's pulling. No one's running well. Everyone's stressed about what the dog's doing. So this is the Moose on the Loose is ranting about, firstly, dogs off leash when you're out running. Because you know how many of those things there are. If you're running along, the lady doesn't have a dog on a lead, maybe it's a border collie, a Labrador, comes running up to you, it's happy, its tail's wagging, it's jumping on you, so she thinks it's okay. Oh, no, it's just playing, it just wants to play with you. Isn't that cute? And you're like, no, it's not cute, get it away from me, I don't want to fucking... And I love dogs, but not when I'm out running trying to enjoy my run. Like, get your dog away from me. This isn't why I'm out here. Coupled with that, if you're on a workout, say you're running around the Barwon River, the Lake Burley Griffith, or wherever you are, and you're running at like 3 minute pace, 20K an hour, and you have a dog run up to you, that is just dangerous. And as cute as dog owners think it is, it ain't cute and it's dangerous. So put your dog on a leash if you are walking it, especially in leashed areas, like just follow the rules. You're not above the rules. Put your dog on a leash. And if you think about rocking up to a group run with a dog, especially an annoying dog, think again. Maybe it's best to run by yourself on that one.
Mm-hmm, very good. What about if you're in we've got a couple of no dog leash areas, so they get to put them off the leash, and it's always a place where there's some really good running trails. So I get the dog being off the leash, but it's still got to be a controllable dog. You should still be able to run past that dog off the leash without it, like, trying to go you. Does my head in.
Yeah. Those dog parks or whatever, they're off-leash areas, fine, but there's always a stipulation that the dog must be under verbal control. So you can have your dog off a leash, it's allowed, but if it's out of control and you don't control it verbally, it's still not right.
Yeah,
there's still rules against that.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought this one up. Brad, you haven't had a cousin like try to attack you with a dog while you're running or something before?
No, I haven't. But I'm always, I'm always worried, especially when I'm doing a session, that, you know, 20K an hour, if you do hit a dog, it's not going to be pretty.
You ever rock up to a run, a group run, and someone brings their dog?
We had one at the beer mall the other day.
I don't go on many group runs.
And I've
got a pug, so the pug doesn't go real well on long runs anyway.
You take it on short runs?
Nah, just throw the ball to it for 5 minutes and it's worn out. It's all good.
That's what you want in a dog right there.
Very good, very good. Good rant. I think there's so many people. And you just run like they're going to attack you. It's like, you just rate this dog as, this is a threat to me. I'm going, it's going to rather stuff up the session, or you've got to slow things down to make sure it doesn't jump up on you.
And I think a lot of dog owners probably don't appreciate like how fast like 3 minute K's is, you know, like they just see that you're out jogging, but it's like actually moving as fast as some bikes do. So it is dangerous.
I just don't think they give a shit at all. Like they have no cares. And it's, it's good because when I run with Dolce, he fucking hates dogs, but dogs always go to him first. It's hilarious. So as soon as we run along and the dog rocks up, it goes straight for Dolce and you just see his face. He gets mad, he gets grumpy, and I start laughing. So it's good having him around to take care of the dogs.
Yeah, good one, good one. Alrighty, I introduce us this week's guest. Big, big guest this week.
Oh, well, I mean, this guy has been touted as the... I was speaking to Collis Birmingham today, and Collis thinks he can go under 13 minutes. He can break Australian records. Pat Tiernan. Patrick Tiernan. He's an NCAA cross-country champion. He's Zatopek winner, 2016. 2017, he finished second to Stewie McSween. He's run in the Olympics, the World Championships. He's run a 13:13 5K. Sponsored by Nike. Part of the Melbourne Track Club. We may not have heard much about him because he lives in America and he hasn't won sort of major fun runs over here, or he hasn't really, you know, what the media is like over here. They're pretty light on the running news. So he probably needs to come over here and win a few City to Surfs and get his name in the paper a lot before everyone knows him. But he is genuinely a fantastic bloke and he has some serious talent with running. This is a bloke I am very excited to see what happens in the future, what he can be capable of. And I want this guy to run a marathon in a year. I just want to see what he can do. I don't want to wait 5 years. I want to see an Australian break 2:10, and this is the bloke with the pedigree to do it.
Well, interesting you said that, because he's only 23, but when you hear the interview and just the way he carries himself, it sounds like he's 28 going on 35, his maturity and the way he's decided to stick with his coach overseas, and just everything he says about recovery is remarkable, and his views on training at such a young age.
Yeah, he definitely takes the conservative options, it seems. Like there's always, if there's a decision to be made, he'll sort of go on the conservative side of things, which, I mean, we could call it mature, safe. I don't know whether there'll be he'll need to take risks later on to get results or whatever. But at the moment, he is, I'd say he's Australia's best distance runner.
Ticking along.
10K, 27:29 he's run. No one's run that fast for a long time.
13th at World Cross, was that? It must have been 2016.
That's right,
I've got that article in front of me now. The only people to finish higher at World Cross Country were Di Casella, Monty Getty, Mottram and Collis Birmingham. So that's the quote. Yeah. They're the only better runs than this guy, and he's 23. How'd you enjoy interviewing him? A bit nervous leading in?
A little bit, because I'd only sort of met, I met him the day before. I just walked past and introduced myself, and he's a really good bloke, like very down to earth, chats to you like you're your mate, and it was humbling to meet him. He's my favourite distance runner at the moment.
He even asked and for a photo at the end, didn't he?
He did ask for a photo. I said, Pat, mate, normally I reserve these, but for you, I'll take a photo with you. And it's a terrible photo. Probably won't share that one. A good photo.
We'll put it up on the Facebook page tonight.
Actually, there's a photo of us both sitting there from the side on profile. And as soon as I saw it, I thought, shit, there are two pretty big noses in that photo right there. Couple of blokes with some serious schnozzers.
Yeah, and that's your mate Brad, so thanks for hooking up that interview. You fanboyed him and got us in with that interview.
Yeah, well, you boys know how big a fan I am. I've had massive raps on him for probably a couple of years now, and it was mainly around how sensible his training is. And I'd love to see a guy like him on Strava so that people can see that you don't need to be banging out massive sessions to race well. That's the thing that always hit home to me when I sort of came across him a couple of years ago. But yeah, so down to earth. And I think I need to listen to this interview every time I'm on one of my easy runs just to slow me down, just to go, what would Pat Tiernan do in this situation? So yeah, it's an awesome interview. You did really well, Julian.
Yeah, it was just two blokes having a yarn. And yeah, I enjoyed listening to it as well. Beautiful. Listeners can tune into that one and would love to hear their feedback. Well done to Jack Rayner, who won a bit of a competition that we put on the Facebook page. I reckon he may have been probably rooming with him at Falls Creek, though. I may have had a bit of inside knowledge. So, yeah, thanks for joining to those people over there. And we'll catch you next week. What's on this week, Brad? Got much on?
Big week. I think this week will be my largest week of volume ever. But I guess I'm a full-time athlete at the moment, so just got to make sure that I recover. And, so it's all good. Yeah. So what have we got, 7 weeks, 8 weeks?
Have you got a race coming up? What's coming up?
I'm meant to do park run next week, but I'm just going to jog. I'm just going to have a week off and just make sure I guess absorb all the hard training I've been doing the last month. But I'm thinking of maybe coming down your way and doing city to city at Albury.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, cash
money there. Well, cash money. That's why Kroger's there. It's like 2.5 hours from my house.
It's a 10K a couple of weeks out from Biwa, so I thought, that could work.
I'm thinking about coming up too, you know.
You should.
Showdown. Yeah. You two have never raced. Do it. Like since we've been on the podcast, but not mainstream. Yeah. I have to take on the live main every time. It just makes me look bad, Brad.
I'll see what I can do.
Yeah. Julian? Sorry. Keep going.
It's a long way away.
Yeah, especially get rolled by Croker. what are you doing now? Track? You're going to hit some shorter stuff?
Yeah, you see my workout tonight?
You didn't have it named by the time I was looking at it. What was it?
It's Thursday.
Thursday for people listening. Save for next week.
Save for next week. But I am feeling good. I'm going to do the country champs, so just another week of high mileage this week. Tick off a big long run. Do a session Saturday morning before it gets too hot, and then next week back on the track.
Far out. I'm just looking at that session now. That's one straight out of Frank Shorter's book that I just finished today.
Really?
That's a nice session. Yeah. I like it. We'll talk
about
it
next week. Probably run 208 then.
I think he was more 209, wasn't he, in the end? It's a good book, though. Thanks for recommending that for me.
It's good, isn't it?
I quite enjoyed it. Gets pretty deep in there, but it's a good book.
It does. He opens himself up.
Yeah, which is good. Honesty is good, especially about those issues that he discusses. I'm having a reasonably big week. Going to try to get up to 180 this week again, and then I'm going to go to Hobart next weekend to run the half marathon down there. So a bit of half marathon work, and treat that one kind of like I did run Melbourne when I was leading into Berlin last time around. So good hard hit out, and it's a loaded field. I'll be lucky to run top 10, I reckon. It's looking very strong. Hopefully maybe do some podcast work while I'm down there. Kill a few birds with one stone. That's it. Thanks for tuning in again, listeners. And enjoy this interview coming up with Pat Tiernan. See you, boys.
See you next week.
All right, Pat Tiernan, and welcome to Inside Running Podcast.
Thanks, mate.
How's your run this morning?
Oh, it's good. Yeah, we did a little bit of a pick-up today just to see how I'm adjusting to the altitude, but no, it went really well.
Yeah. So, first time at altitude?
Yeah, first time doing a stint up here, for sure. So I'll be up here for 4 weeks, and just feeling our way through the first week at the moment.
Yep. Is that decision to come to altitude... Nick's your manager part of MTC and your coach
Marcus.
Was that a decision?
So I mean, obviously, Falls Creek in January is a common thing when you're in Australia, as far as distance running goes. So Nick had mentioned it to me after World Champs, and but at the end of the day, like, all decisions came down to whether Marcus and I were comfortable with doing it, and we thought it was something where there was a chance to reap a lot of benefits from. So, yeah, I mean, it's something we've been planning our training around for the last probably 2 or 3 months, just to make sure I'm prepared when I came up here.
So you never came up as a junior? Like, we see heaps of junior squads up here.
So I came up once for a week with Tim O'Shaughnessy and the AA group. It was either 2010 or 2011. And, just came up and jogged around and got to know a few other guys up here.
Yep.
And then I was actually up last year. I was meant to try and jump in some sessions, but I rolled my ankle the day before I came up. So it was more just getting familiar with the area again. Yeah. Never actually came up for more than a week before. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, and that's funny to roll your ankle before you get here. I think I rolled my ankle 15 times yesterday.
Yeah, I couldn't believe my luck. I think it was about 10 hours before I was meant to get on the plane.
Yeah.
And it was just... terrible. But yeah, I did the Fitzy's Hut run yesterday.
Yeah.
I tell you, up the top there when it's blowy and whatnot, it's pretty hard to stand your feet. So
that's, I think it was quite bizarre as I was running along there. I'm thinking, how did they figure this was a good place to do a workout?
I don't know, it wouldn't be my first choice, but it definitely strengthens your ankles.
It's different. It's a unique spot. I don't think if you brought, like, say you brought a big pack of professional runners maybe from the States and said, this is our workout today. You'd scare them.
I'm not sure how they'd react to that.
But, yeah. They call it, what, RUP certified course? I think. Not quite up there.
Yeah.
So just for the listeners, we're mainly going to discuss sort of current, present day Pat Tiernan, but to introduce yourself a little bit, how did you get into running and how did you find yourself as a professional runner?
Yeah, so I took up running just as another sport in primary school, actually, when I was 9. My math teacher at the time saw me running around at, like, a school practice in the morning that we just went to for a bit of fun. And he asked me if I wanted to come to this, to join his squad in the afternoon to do a session. And then from there, I just picked it up. So that was Tom Bradbury. I trained under him for about... probably 8 years, all through school. And it was just another sport. I mean, I'd meet with him Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and then go and play cricket or footy or hockey or something on a Saturday. And then if I had cricket training during the week, that was my running training for the day. So it wasn't too serious. It was just another thing I was doing. And then when I was 16 or 17, I decided I wanted to focus a bit more on it. Which was tough because cricket was my first passion in sport, so I had to give that up. But I had a great time, then moved to Brisbane, trained under Pat Clough for a year up there, which was great. I mean, obviously, he's been in the sport for ages, forever, some would say. So it was great to train under him and just listen to what he had to say. And then I got the offer from Villanova in 2012. Started there January 2013, and that sort of took me to where I am now.
Yeah, excellent. And now, still based in the US?
Yeah, still based in Philly. So Marcus O'Sullivan's the head coach at Villanova, and he agreed to take me on as a professional.
Yeah.
Which I'm really thankful for, because things were working out well for me towards the end of my college years, and just figure there's no point fixing something if it isn't broken. Yep. So, no, we're doing well, and as long as that keeps working, then I'll stay over there.
Yeah. And so right now that you still live around the college, you still train with the athletes there?
So I live, about halfway between, so there's Villanova University and then Haverford College, which is actually where we do most of our training. And I live about halfway between those two schools now. But I don't actually get to run a lot with the team, just because they're on a one day a week cycle, and I'm trying one session a day cycle, whereas I'm trying to go 9:30 and 5:30,
yeah.
Get two runs in a day. So a lot of it's on my own. I'll have mates around to jump in runs with me, which I think's the hardest part about training, honestly. I mean, people think the sessions and the long runs are the tough ones, but it's getting out for that afternoon jog when it's, you're not really sure if there's any much benefit in it. But yeah, having someone to meet for those runs is really important for me.
Yeah.
But yeah, all the sessions are on my own. Occasionally I'll get guys jump in with me for a few things, but at the end of the day, I'm pretty happy with my setup.
Yeah, cool. And the differences that you sort of see, you did a year with Chloe in Brisbane, and now you're training professionally in America. Much different in the training philosophy or the structure of training between the Australia and the US system?
Yeah, I mean, well, for starters, they're on a 2-session-a-week training schedule, so yeah. It's just Tuesday, Friday for me,
okay.
Rather than the Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, or Monday, Wednesday, Friday. So that's, I mean, I adapted really well to that. I actually felt like I was recovering a lot better, and due to that, racing a lot better as well. So that's something that's worked for me. It doesn't work for everyone. But yeah, it's all relative at the end of the day, I think. So that was the main thing, was the 2 different sessions. I think a lot of people tend to think that when you go to the US, you automatically start crunching and the sessions become a lot harder and you pick your mileage up and all that. But I was really fortunate in that Marcus was really, really steady with me.
Yeah.
Because I was probably only running about 50-60k a week when I went to him. And we've got it up now to around 130, 135, but it was all slowly building it up over the last 5 years or so.
Yeah.
And yeah, sessions aren't ridiculously hard. I mean, obviously, you're working hard in them, but at the same time, it's more about the recovery and the stuff you do in the gym. Yeah, so.
And I think Brad used to look at a sweat account that you had.
Yeah, probably a couple years ago.
And he would always, he sort of mentioned that he used to look at your workouts and go, oh, this guy's sensible, like he's not trying to crush everything. And he really maybe thought that was like an influence from the Chloe days. Because he trains a lot with Sean Crichton.
Yeah.
They have a similar philosophy. Is that how Marcus takes it as well?
Yeah, so I mean, all that credit, like I got to give all that credit to Marcus, because without him sort of telling me that this, like, you don't need to run hard all the time, I'd definitely be out there just trying to crush every workout.
Yeah.
I definitely worked harder than I had to when I was with Chloe, and it wasn't because of him. Like, he was telling me just to run to form, just run how you feel sort of thing. And I was just a young kid misinterpreting it and going out and racing every session, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, definitely started with Chloe. He definitely had that, put that in the back of my mind, and then having Marcus sit down with me and really going over it, just instilled it. And yeah, I mean, that's a lot of kids ask me how much mileage I'm doing and what sort of sessions I'm doing, and they're always sort of amazed that I'm not really running that much or I'm not running that fast when I do it. Like, some kids will try and tell me that they're running 305s for a tempo, and I'm just thinking, well, I'm only running 310s.
Yeah, that is such a good point.
Yeah, and I'm just thinking I would just want to say to them, like, there's no need to be running that fast.
Yeah.
But it's hard to get that across, especially with kids, because kids want to see the results straight away.
Yeah.
You know, they go and they think, oh, it's not working in 3 weeks. Or is it something that takes time? Like, sometimes it'll take up to 2 or 3 years for it to pay off, you know? Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, patience mainly just patience was the main thing I learned over in college. So,
yeah, that's really good stuff. And I think there's, it would be great to have more of that available to local, to kids, because what happens, it's happening a lot now, is Strava is the go-to running app, and you've got some high-profile people on Strava who use it as a way to show off almost what they do, and a lot of kids look at that and go, geez, have a look at what this bloke's doing, I need to be doing that.
Yeah.
And then there's guys like yourself that aren't posting, and you're obviously the ones getting the results. So.
Yeah, I mean, I think those apps are great as far as people being able to see like what the guys at the top are doing, and like as far as the extra things. So for me personally, I'm more interested in looking at what they're doing in the gym or what they're doing after a run as far as speed drills or strides and stuff go. I think it's great in that aspect, but I think, a lot of younger guys, just guys and girls, tend to look at it and think, oh, okay, he's running 13:20, so I got to be doing the same as him.
Yeah.
Whereas at the end of the day, like, nothing's going to work exactly for you. You might have a guy who's 6'4" looking at what, like a guy like Leo Manzano or Matt Centrowitz is doing, who's a lot shorter and smaller build, and it's just not going to work for him.
Yeah.
So it's all relative, and something you need someone there to really take care of you and look after what you're doing. And I was just really fortunate, and Marcus took the time to sit down with me every once a week at least and go over what we were doing.
Yeah. And so obviously Marcus is such a big influence, and I've listened to you talk about how running in college was so good for you because you had to love the team atmosphere, mm-hmm. and being around mates helped spur you on. Now you're training by yourself a lot. It must be, Marcus must be worth it, basically, to not join a pack.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously it's hard not being in a group and having the same like guys to run with every day and whatnot. But at the end of the day, I've got a good group of mates still who are around the area. They're not all of them are running still, but they understand what I'm trying to do.
Yeah.
And they're respectful of that. So when we meet up for a coffee or for a dinner and a beer every now and then. And they'll come out with me on those afternoon runs when they want to. So it's things like that which make it a lot easier. But yeah, definitely training under him was something that I always said I was going to keep doing,
yeah.
as long as it worked. And at the end of the day, like, the other things aren't really that important to me right now. I mean, it's great coming back here in the lead up to the Comm Games and being able to spend time with family and friends. But at the end of the day, this is my job, and that's the way you've got to look at it.
Yeah. So there's nothing else sort of keeping you in Philly? Girlfriend?
I do actually have a girlfriend in New York, and she's great. I mean, obviously, that's another big factor for me in staying in the US. But yeah, as far as staying in the Philadelphia region, Marcus, training under Marcus, that's my main motivation there.
And I saw a flow track video of you getting some lactate testing during your workout.
Yeah.
Does he come and do that at most workouts? Or?
Yeah, so whenever I'm in Philly, he'll monitor all my workouts. And I think that's another thing that makes it a lot easier to work out on my own is he's always coming out, and he's also always very particular about it. So he's paying close attention to what I'm doing. Which makes it a lot easier mentally to say, all right, like, this guy's watching me too, like, right to the point, so I gotta be on target with all my reps and stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, we do lactate testing for most things. I mean, obviously easy days you don't really need to, but like, even today at the end of my run, I just got a little sample just to make sure things were under control and that I was adapting well. But yeah, and that's another reason why I train with him, is because he's not only sort of, I wouldn't say babying, that's not the right word, but sort of easing me into professional running, but we're also making sure that I'm working the right systems for the right workouts.
Yeah.
And that's where the lactate testing comes into play, and he's still learning a lot about it, which is great because he explains it to me and I learn a lot about it. So we're sort of going through this whole learning phase together, I guess, which is great. He's been really great as far as coming out to workouts and making sure that we're doing the right things when we do that. So
yeah,
yeah, no, it's working out really well, and definitely something I want to keep going, but we'll take it year by year, and if he needs me to move on and he needs to focus on something else, then I'm happy to do that. But as long as he's happy to have me, I'll stay on board.
It's a pretty exciting to know what you've achieved so far, the times you've ran, the races you've won off what I would consider small mileage for that those events.
Yeah.
Like if we look at that sort of 10,000 metre race, that, I would suggest you would have the least amount of running behind you than any of the guys in that field.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, a lot of those guys, a lot of them are older, so they've probably been through a similar phase. But yeah, I mean, a lot of people think if you're running 5K up, you've got to be hitting between 90 and 100 miles a week, which is fair. I mean, that's what we've grown up to know, and that's what research has shown over the years. I guess the key with my training is making sure the percentage of hard mileage that I do is similar to what they'd be doing. So I'll still do around 25 to 30 miles a week of hard work. It's just I'm cutting back on the junk mileage.
Yeah.
So still, I think that's why it's working for me, is I'm still getting the same quality stuff in there. Just cutting out a couple of afternoon runs that I don't, to let the body recover a bit
better. Yeah, you'll prioritise recovery over the second 7K.
Absolutely, 8K, yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, I just think at the end of the day, you beat your legs up a bit too much, and for a guy like me who's a bit taller and it's easy for things to fall out of place, there's just no point.
You know? And it's working.
Yeah.
So for a guy like, actually, Brady, Brad and myself, we've never had anything really work for us that puts us in a position anywhere near like yourself. So what we try to do is is to do as much work as I possibly can to try to make up for the talent deficit. Right. And so that's why I go and run more mileage, because I think I have to work harder, because I don't have the natural talent as maybe someone like yourself. And I think that's a trap. Maybe that's a trap that I can get into.
And I mean, it's hard for me to speak on behalf of anyone else as far as this method of training goes, because I know a lot of people who it hasn't worked out as they would have thought. I've just been very fortunate, and I went over to the US and this sort of training was what my body wanted and what it needed at the time. So I've adapted well to it. Like you said, it's hard to sometimes figure out exactly whether it works for everyone or whether it's just a particular sort of body type and system that it works for.
Do you ever stand on the start line and think, I wonder what would have happened if I ran 100 mile weeks going into this race? Like,
sometimes. I mean, you always get on the start line. For me, it's more at the finish line.
Yeah, yeah.
You sort of finish and you're thinking, I wonder what would have happened if I'd done something differently.
Yeah.
On the start line, my mentor is sort of just trying to clear it out, and that's when you've got to try and instill to yourself that, yeah, I've done everything I can do.
Yeah.
And listen to my coach, listen to my body, done all that sort of stuff. So there's no doubts on the start line. It's it might be sort of in the middle of the race when you're hurt and you're thinking, bloody hell, then maybe I should have done that extra afternoon run or something like that.
That 30K long run.
Yeah, exactly. I haven't doubted what I've been doing with Marcus. It's obviously been tough days and tough periods where if a race hasn't gone my way, you've thought, okay. Like after the 10K World Champs, the next couple of days was tough mentally. I mean, not that I was doubting what we were doing, but it was definitely hard to just immediately look past a result like that. Because at the end of the day, something was very wrong, and I'd like to think it was just a virus or a bug, but it had to be something else that I just wasn't prepared for, you know. And it's easy to put that straight onto the training program or the coach or something like that. It wasn't until about a month or two later that I realised there were just a couple of things that I personally did wrong in the lead up to that. And so I think it's very easy to come to an assumption quickly on training and doubting the coach and the sessions you're doing. But if you give it a bit more thought, then you can figure out that there were little things you could have done differently that might have end in a better result.
What sort of things?
So for me, I mean, we had a training camp in Spain a couple of weeks before World Champs, and Nick had told me, he said, yep, it's going to be at like the locations at 1,100 metres or something, which is about 4,000 feet, I think. And I mean, I just had in my head that altitude was 5,000 and above.
Mm-hmm.
And so I told Marcus, yeah, we're going to this training camp in Spain. And he said, okay, I'll give you something to do while you're over there. And at the end of the day, I should have said, like, it's going to be at 4,000 feet. Because even though it's not high enough to get a benefit out of, it's high enough to alter your system. And if you're down a little bit, then, you know, anything can happen. And so we went to, I did a mile in Cork, and then it was, I feel like in Ireland it's always a relatively big night after a meet like that. So we were out till about 2 a.m. and it wasn't a big night by any means, like a couple of beers and stuff. But you get home and you're a little overtired on the plane, and then you get there, and because we hadn't, I just had a training program that would have been suitable for sea level.
Yeah.
You're pushing probably a little too hard, and then your immune system's down. It opens up any sort of like any sort of virus can get in and affect you, and ultimately that's what happened.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, that's all on me, just not communicating and not just not getting the right information to the people who I needed to.
Yeah.
So it's nothing we did training wise or even preparation wise that was wrong. It was just a lack of communication, and that falls solely on me. So it's little things like that, you know, that takes you a couple of months to sit down and go over what you were thinking, and you're like, oh yeah, that was a pretty bad mistake to make, and pretty amateur when you think about it in the end. But you learn from it and you move forward, and at the end of the day it reinstills all your faith in your coach and your training, and move forward.
So this is a pretty good maybe segue into how you transitioned from college to professional rowing.
Yep.
So in 2016 you won the NCAA cross country, which is probably the biggest running event. I would say it's probably one the biggest race to win as your age group in America. Like, everyone wants to win it.
Yeah, no, it's a good one to win.
Yeah.
Definitely, yeah. I remember I was talking to Nick when I came back here afterwards, and he said, well, we'll probably be able to sort something out for you after that.
So, if someone maybe hadn't heard of you, then they would have heard of you after that.
Yeah, definitely. Exactly. So, no, it was a good one to win and belt there.
Yeah, and so they would have known, like, a lot of companies would have started to think, hey, this bloke's going to be graduating soon,
mm-hmm.
and he's going to be a professional runner, so that you eventually signed with Nike.
Yeah.
But what was that transition period or that courting period like between graduating and signing?
It was good. I mean, I think for me, I knew, like, so I ran in Rio, and then it was a good experience, but it wasn't the result I was hoping for. So I always like to think that my professional career probably started my last semester there, leading into that cross-country championship. I knew if I won it, then I'd have a great opportunity to transition well into a professional career. So, we very much trained like a professional would that semester. And then, after that, came home, and it was always on the cards to come back and do the Zatopek run and try and win that as well.
Yeah.
Because for me, that was, as far as getting a contract with an Australian company, those were the two big ones that I wanted to win.
Yeah. Bree and I were there that night, watched that race. It was impressive, actually. It was in the rain.
And it was rough.
We just loved it. We just thought,
I remember showing up and thinking, this is perfect. I've been running in cross country for the last 2 months. So,
well, we were excited because we knew you just won that race, and it's like our first. Well, a lot, when we say our, the running public in Australia's first real look at you.
Yeah, I mean, because I'd come back for the Olympic trials in March or April that year, but I was a little off and, once again, hadn't really had my big result in the US yet. So, that was a really exciting race for me to come back and do, just because, like you said, it was my first big race on home soil in a long time. But yeah, so after that, I agreed to jump on board with Nick and the Melbourne Track Club, as far as managing and agency purposes go. And yeah, he was able, we're going back and forth between a few companies over here, I think, and then he gave me a call just before Christmas and said, he's got a pretty good offer for you.
Yeah.
And I mean, for me, it was perfect. Like, I was hoping it would be Nike just because I've been running in their shoes for the last 6 years. And it's pretty, I think it's pretty tough to transition into a new shoe.
Yeah.
Especially at this stage. So, no, I mean, I was over the moon when he came up to me with something and gave me the opportunity to just run full time in the lead up to, like, that world champs and then into the future till the next Olympics. So,
you're on a contract with Nike Australia?
Nike Australia.
Yeah, okay. And how does Nike Australia feel about you being based overseas, given they're not getting a lot of exposure in that regard?
Here? Yeah. Couldn't tell you, honestly. I mean, they're obviously, I think they're still pretty happy with me, though. I mean, I'm coming back here for major events. I was here for Zatopek, obviously here till the Com Games now. But no, I mean, Nike's great in the sense that they've got stations all over the world, so I deal a lot with Nike US when I'm over there. And, you know, Brittany Melrose is my main contact over here, and if she has any marketing stuff that she wants me to do, she'll send it through. And but no, we figure out ways to do it, and it works out fine. But at the end of the day, they want you to run well.
Yeah.
And they understand that based in the US is where it's what works best for me. So
yeah,
everyone's happy in the end, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So no, it works out really well.
As a you seem to not be as prominent on the social media pages, like a bit like maybe Collis and Selma as well. Under the MTC banner, you guys seem pretty similar. What does Nike want or require from that regard? Like, I had a friend who ran for Solomon, and he basically had a minimum that he had to be posting, and it got a little bit sickening, actually.
Yeah, they're pretty good in that sense. I mean, it might be different for someone like Jen Lacaze or Heidi C, who have a big following on social media. For me, it's just so long as I'm out there, like when I'm posting stuff and I'm running, I'm out there in a Nike top.
Yeah.
And I'm promoting, like, just as far as you're promoting them in some way.
Yeah.
And they're fine with it. But yeah, they've been pretty light on. No one's sent me a message to say you need to post more or anything.
Yeah.
Which is good, because, I mean, I think social media is great in some aspects, but it's also, I think it can sort of take over a little bit if you're not prepared for it. And I'm definitely not prepared for that sort of thing. So, yeah, no, they're great with it. I mean, there's obviously other ways to do it. So if you're doing a some sort of interview or TV stuff, then if you're wearing a Nike shirt, they're happy.
Yeah. We'll get a photo later.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll get their Nike shoes out, actually.
So, but yeah, it's just so long as you're in it, and they give you plenty of gear, so you're always in it, you know. There's no issues there.
And on the gear, like, we actually own a running store, and Nike is our biggest brand in the store.
Yeah.
And we've seen some pretty exciting stuff coming up next year.
Yeah.
What shoes do you prefer to run?
So I used to always run on the Pegs.
Yeah.
But I actually got a little sort of, not even sure what it ended up being, but some sort of irritation on the back of my Achilles.
Yeah.
Which prevented me from running in any shoes. It had a sort of tight grip on the back there, so that ruled out, like, the Vomero, the Pegs. And I mean, most companies, you'd think, all right, well,
you're gonna have
to cut a hole in the back sort of thing. But no, they sent me a pair of Lunar Epics, which have just been, like, initially I looked at them and I thought, oh, I don't know if I'm going to be comfortable running in these. But they're great. I've been wearing them since April. Really good running.
But really soft, really, like, soft. There's no hard heel count. There's no plastic bucket.
Yeah, it's hard around here, so it keeps you, like, the bottom of the heel, so it keeps your foot in place, but around the top it's nice and loose.
Yeah.
So I wear those just for regular runs and stuff, and then for sessions, the Flyknit stuff's great. like it's nice and loose up the top, so really flexible.
You want the 4% yet?
No, I haven't tried it yet. Just sticking to what's working for me at the moment. Might try them out in the next off season.
They're soft in the heel.
Yeah,
but those Zoom Flies, they killed people's Achilles. So there's two models, and Zoom Fly has a really stiff heel counter, and the Vaporfly 4%'s quite gentle back then.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I haven't tried them, but I'd love to get in a pair and just test them out.
Yeah. Well, on that, it's probably a pretty good sort of segue into talking about your road racing future, because I'm just actually finishing a book called Kings of the Road. It talks about Salazar, Bill Rogers and Frank Shorter, and about all the US road races and how it sort of started this running boom. And I'm thinking, oh, I remember Deke going over and Mono winning, racing a lot over there and doing really well.
Yeah.
Do you have any road races pegged for this year?
Not at the moment. I think we're just focusing on track this year.
Yeah.
But I don't know, there was talk of maybe doing the Great North Run in September, just because it's an off year and nothing's going on that time of year.
Yeah.
So I'll see how we go. I mean, it'll be a great experience, but would be another step up in distance, so we'll just see how things are travelling. But yeah, I mean, I used to love running on the roads back here before I went to college. Yeah. It was always good fun. And actually, my favourite race of the year was Fifth Avenue Mile, which was on the roads. And I mean, it's not a... it's not a longer one, but at the same time, it's a great atmosphere and something I'm definitely looking forward to participating in at some point. But I think right at the moment, the track's my main priority and doing all right there. And then obviously when World Cross comes up, I'll jump in there and do that. But yeah, the road season just seems to mismatch a little bit with me going back over to the US to do my first couple of months of training and then jumping over here for the track season, so I never really catch it, which is fine by me for now.
Yeah.
I mean, as far as things are going well.
It's probably, you've probably answered this question already, but a lot of chatter about sort of the next 210, sub 210 marathoner in Australia, and I know Mona would love to see you move up early.
Yeah. I mean, I actually bumped into him today on the on the trail, and he was saying he wanted to catch up. But
I know what that means.
We'll see how that goes.
But, yeah.
But no, I mean, it's definitely, marathon's definitely on the cards down the road. I mean, if you want to have a long career, it's almost inevitable. You know, at some point you're going to have to make the step. I just think right now I'm doing really well on the track. As far as my personal aspirations go, I mean, if you'd asked me last year if I thought I could run a 7:37 3K, I would have told you there's no way. Maybe when I'm peaking. So I mean, I'm really excited with where I'm at, and I think there's just a lot more for me to gain on the track. For now, so yeah, I mean, love to make the step up at some point, but right now, like, my long run's only 1:45, so it's it'll be a big step, and I mean, I think Marcus is pretty happy with my progress, and Nick's very excited to see what I can do on the track. So, as far as if I've got those two on board, that's my support crew. And as long as they're happy, I'm happy.
Do Nick and Marcus talk, chat, discuss your future and your plans?
Yeah. So they actually go back a little bit. Adrian Blinko did the same thing that I did. He was at Nova and then trained under Marcus still around there, but when he went to Europe he was training with Nick's group. They've done it before, and obviously they're pretty happy with how I'm progressing, so things are good between them. Which is great. I mean, and I think I love the setup of having a coach and a managing standpoint, because I think it's great to sort of have two different great minds like they have coming together to figure out the best position for me. They talk every now and then, which is good. And usually have the same mind paths and stuff like that. So
does it make a bit of a tricky situation, say you come to Falls, you're on a different training schedule to the guys here, pretty much everyone does the same stuff here. Like, the 15 guys do the same thing as the marathoners.
Yep.
You come in with a different program, you wake up, do a totally different run to the other guys. How does that work?
It's tough. I mean, that was the situation with me in Europe as well. I wasn't working out with them, so it makes for not tension, but it's just, you know, it's something different, and you're on a different schedule, so you never really fully in click with them. But no, I mean, everyone's been great with it. Nick especially, like, I mean, he understands that it's working for me. And, no, I mean, he'll come out and watch me do the sessions, and he even just loves to come out just to learn a bit more, I think, as well.
Yeah.
Which I think is a great characteristic to have, coming out and seeing what other people are doing. Because otherwise you're just stuck in the same sort of routine, you know. But no, it's definitely tough. Not so much in doing the stuff on your own, but just saying to them, good luck in the session today, sort of thing. I'm doing my own thing tomorrow, because, I mean, it rubs up the wrong way with some people. I think, some people can get the thought process that you think you're better than them or something like that. But, you know, at the end of the day, I know why I'm doing it, and the people who are my good mates know why I'm doing it, so at the end of the day, it's all friendly. And
yeah. I don't think it'd be too hard to recruit a few over to your session if you...
Well, that's the other thing. I mean, it's not something I don't want to come over and have people saying, oh, I want to jump in with you instead of doing what I usually do, because then you create a bit of tension the other way, you know? So that's another hard part, is trying to get people to stick to their routine while I'm doing mine. But no, it's great. I'm looking forward to, I mean, I'll be able to jump in one session a week with them, which I'm really looking forward to. Yep. And then obviously the long runs I'll be in every week from now on. So no, it's just great to have people to run with, even if it's not every day.
Yeah, cool. And it's a lot of discipline involved there as well on your behalf. Like, you could easily just try to tweak a session here or there, because I know it's nice to warm up with the boys and cool down with them. Like, you get it. I think one of the things that I know a lot of coaches like to do is to relax after a workout. It just helps with recovery, like hormone releases and all that. And it's probably why in college it works so well, because you've got a bunch of boys and all the banter.
Yeah, exactly.
And by the end of the warm down, it's like, oh, I feel so much better already. Yeah. Whereas if you have a shit workout or a hard workout by yourself, you stew on it for that cool down.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a bit rough, but no, and I mean, I think it's also, it can also become a bit of a piss and cum test at the end there. Like,
true.
If somebody's had a better workout, then, like, because you're all comparing times there and stuff. So that's another thing I love about training on my own, is, like, I can say what I want, but I'm the one responding, you know. So
yeah. Oh, and it's a process.
You're not comparing to anyone, you just, it is what it is. I mean, That's what I'm looking forward to jumping in this week, is just sort of being able to jump on the back of them and enjoy the process of it.
Yeah, cool. Let's talk a little about what life as an athlete's like. Because we talked to Salma and we got a bit of an idea, like maybe it's not what the, say, you look at the Instagram accounts of some professionals in Australia and it's like, oh, this looks amazing. You guys are on the beach every day. So, what does a standard day look like as a true professional athlete?
I mean, it is busy. Like, if you do all the little things, it does go by pretty quick. Because a lot of people, like my sister actually, just before I came back, she asked me if I could, if I was going to get a job while I was over here. And I said, oh, I've got a job. And she was like, no, but like, just to keep yourself busy.
Like at the pizza shop?
Something just to do for a few hours a day. And I was like, you know, I'm actually all right. Like, I don't get that bored during the day. Excellent. But, so it's... It's funny. It's because I wake up around... Try and wake up around 7, 7.30 every day. Have something to eat. And then usually do my session or my run at 9, 9.30. I'll usually go for between an hour or 2 hours, depending on what it is that day. And then Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, I'm always doing something afterwards. So Monday, Thursdays, I'll do some sprint drills just to try and get a more efficient stride, which is something we've been working on, introduced this last year. So that'll take about 45 minutes. And then we go in the gym after that and actually do an upper back lift to try and get my posture a bit straighter. So once again, that's 45 minutes if you're doing all the little things, like stretching out properly, doing the warm-up. So by the end of that, that gets to about 12:30, 1 o'clock.
Yep.
Get home, have something to eat, and then you're pretty buggered after that, so you want to sit down and read a book or watch some telly or something like that. And then if you're trying to meet anyone that day, that takes another 30 to an hour out of your day. And then before you know it, it's 5:30 and you're going out for your afternoon run.
Yeah.
So, no, I mean, it's the time passes pretty quick. There are some days where it's slow, like a Wednesday will be very slow because it's just one run and you got the whole day free.
Yeah.
But it's those days where I try and get stuff done. So I'll either do, like, if I'm up here, I'll try and go down the mountain and do my grocery shopping or, try and catch up with a few people or line up some meetings with... I'll try and meet with some sort of strength and conditioning coach once a month,
yeah,
or get a massage once a week. So there's all these little meetings that take up your day that you just don't consider.
Yeah. And that's the true difference.
Yeah.
Like, that's what it seems to me is,
yeah,
you don't do that if you work. That's what happens when you go to work. You miss everything else.
And that's why I'm so grateful that I've been given the opportunity just to do this full time,
yeah,
because I can fully commit to it, and I just have the time to do everything right, you know. Whereas it's hard if you've got a job.
Yeah, and so you did mathematics at college.
I did. Yeah.
Running is enough to get you by at the moment, like contracts wise,
yeah,
earnings.
Yeah.
Do you think that you'll start to maybe investigate how some work during your career could help you when you finish?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've even just started looking into doing a master's in statistics once Comm Games is over. So it's definitely, I mean, for me, thinking about what I'm going to do afterwards is definitely something that is I prioritise.
Yep.
Because at the end of the day, you never know what's going to happen. It's very unpredictable. So always got to have, I mean, a lot of people call it a backup. But at the end of the day, like, it is going to be your focus one day, so it's not a backup.
Yeah.
It's the next step. So, yeah, I mean, that's always a priority. I think this first year out, I just sort of cleared that slate and just focused 100% on this to make,
yep,
sure I had a good setup and a good base set out for the next 4 or 5 years. But, yeah, I mean, it's always, like, and that should be something that would take up my time, is either taking a class a semester or trying to meet with some people in an industry that I'm interested in,
yeah,
once a month or something like that, just to, you know, make some connections, do a bit of networking. And it's amazing the people you can meet through athletics as well. So it's just taken a bit of extra time to meet them and... just making sure you leave a good impression there.
Yeah, good. Diet. So, living in college, obviously not very well funded.
Yeah.
Post-college diet, anything's changed? Are you a bit more professional in how you go about managing that?
I'd like to say the food's better, but I'm cooking it, so I'm never really sure. No, I actually really enjoy it. I think I eat reasonably well. I do eat a lot of junk, which I probably need to cut back on a bit, but at the end of the day, for me at the moment, it's just about getting 3 good meals in a day and making sure that I've got enough in the system to move forward. I actually had a chat to, or been in contact with Philo Saunders before I came up here, because he's done a lot of research into altitude training.
Yeah.
And the main thing he said to me was, make sure you're eating enough and make sure you're sleeping and hydrating and stuff. So, yeah, I mean, as far as diets go, I'm not on a set diet. I'm not on any sort of limitations, but at the same time, I'm making sure I'm eating veggies, eating fruit,
yeah,
getting my protein and stuff in. But there's no set thing down, just making sure I'm eating until I'm full. And
yeah.
Obviously, you don't want to overeat, and I think overeating comes when you're more just lazy and
you get injured or bored feel bad.
Whereas when you're active and you're doing stuff, I feel like you just eat until you're fueled and stuff. So, you know, it's not, I don't think it's difficult. I think a lot of people look into it a bit too heavily and stress about it and stuff like that. And once again, it's all relative. Like somebody of a different body type might have to focus a lot more on it. But I'm just fortunate in the sense that I just have to worry about making sure I've got enough in me.
And beers?
Beers? I had a beer with dinner. I mean, I just think it's... I mean, obviously, if you're going out and having a big night on the town, it's going to affect you in some way.
Is that what college was like a little?
College wasn't too bad. I was actually... I mean, we'd have big nights in college, but I would say I wasn't too bad. It was the year before I went to college where I was...
In Brisbane?
In Brisbane, where I was pretty bad at it. Just turned 18 and was obviously very excited about the whole concept. Yeah. And being in Brisbane, it's a tough culture to shake. But I think it's just you can get away with it when you're younger, I think.
I agree with that.
And body recovers a bit better after it, and you're almost proud of it. It's almost a challenge.
What can I do tomorrow?
Yeah, exactly. Now it feels a bit more like altitude training the next day if you wake up. I think it's just not worth it. I think having a beer with dinner and stuff like that, and I mean, we'll have a couple of drinks tonight for New Year's. I don't think it harms you if you're careful about it, you know, and you're not stupid. So, yeah, I mean, it was funny. There was a bloke who had a drink before the night before a race on the circuit this year, and everyone's sort of gasping at him.
Straight out
there, yeah. No. I won't mention his name, but everyone's sort of gasping at him, thinking, "Oh, what are you doing having a beer like the night before?" And he's like, "Oh, it's just like, it's just dinner. I'm just having a beer," sort of thing. And he's right, you know, it's not like it probably won't affect you. For me, it's more just the mental aspect, like the night before a race, like a booze is the last thing on my mind, so I'm just focusing. If you're just having a beer with dinner or a glass of wine or something like that,
There's two ways to look at alcohol, isn't it? Like enjoying it and then indulging.
That's the thing. It's a matter of being able to have one and say, all right, going to bed.
The party atmosphere is because you're up so late, you sleep so effective. And
that's the thing. The main thing for me was I wasn't sleeping.
Yeah.
So you go out. And that was the thing that happened in Ireland for me, is it was a later night and I only got 4 or 5 hours sleep. Mm. I think I only had 2 beers the whole night, you know? Yeah. So I felt fine, and that's why I went into Spain, and I was thinking I'll be all right.
Yeah.
But I was just tired. My body hadn't recovered properly. So, it's a tough one to sort of fully understand. I think that's why a lot of people just go cold turkey and say, yep, booze is for the end of the season.
Yeah.
But no, I think it's fine to have a casual beer with dinner every now and then.
Cool. Forgot a question I had before, actually, about junior rivals in Australia. Yeah. Who is your toughest? Who do you always remember being always there and about?
My biggest junior rival was Jack Curran.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Which was great, because we were actually really good mates, still are good mates. I remember he didn't probably come on the scene big until National Cross when we were 12, which is a long time ago. And like, I think he came third that year, and Freddie Ovett and I finished first and second.
Yeah.
And if Jack hadn't come on the scene, I would have said Freddie.
Yep.
But Jack just, I just remember I'd be trying to take these races out and trying to run him off his legs, and then every time Bell Lap would go and he'd come whipping by me. We had some great races, and Jack was the better of the two of us all through high school.
Yep.
And then I think it wasn't until our last race in high school at States where I got the better of him. It was always great. I mean, we'd go into those meets and, I mean, he'd always be the guy who I'd be looking for on the start line. I can't necessarily say the same about him. He's probably going into it thinking, all right,
I've won all
just
these.
Got to sit here. Paddle, take it out. I'll just sit in behind you. But yeah, so I mean, but it, like I said, we were great mates and hung out all the time. So it was just like, it was good fun, you know.
Yeah.
And you couldn't go away disappointed.
Yeah.
So made for a very healthy high school racing tradition of culture for me. So
yeah,
I'm very, very grateful for that. But no, there were definitely boys out of state that were tough. I think Timus Harrick was up there, Kyle Martin Alcade, who else? Rory McDonald, Joel Tobin White, so all those sort of boys. I'm probably missing a couple, but yeah. We were actually pretty good up in Queensland at that point. We had Ben Cook, Chevy Black, Grant Quinn. We had a pretty good high school group.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's fizzled out a little bit, but I think a few of them are back running now. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it was a great time. I had a really good experience racing through high school.
And Freddie O'Vet update?
Don't know. I haven't talked to Freddie in a long time. So he was actually, went to school in Toowoomba when we were, up until we were about 10 or 11, I think.
Right.
And then moved to Southport. And then, yeah, we sort of lost contact a bit there. I've heard he's riding now.
Yeah, I thought he was signed.
Yeah, which is great. I just don't think he really enjoyed track and field as much.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I heard he's really into his cycling, which is great. So, really happy for him.
Yeah. All right, cool, we're good. Cool. So, yeah, thanks so much, Pat,
not
for joining the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Enjoy training up here?
Yeah, no, it should be fun.
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to it.
What session are you jumping in with the fellas?
I'll do the Ks with them.
Right.
So I'll do Ks on Tuesday and then a tempo on Fridays, and that'll be my setup for the...
You're going to monitor the lactate at the kitchen?
I will, yeah. I'll...
Hold on, boys, just another...
Yeah, just give me 15 seconds. So I'm trying not to hold anyone up there, but no, we should be fine.
Yeah, yeah. Cool. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks again, mate.
Not a problem, mate.
Yeah.
Anytime. Cheers.
Doesn't matter if it's...